Welcome to another episode of the Wheelchair Roundtable, where real people share real stories and real change begins. We're coming to you from the Town Place Suites by Marriott Studio, right here in the heart of the Rio Grande Valley, located in deep, deep South Texas, the front line and the gateway to the USA. I am Rico, ATP, and riding shotgun is Mr.
Did he just say that?
I might have.
Roland Reyes, and rounding out the team is the Quad Father. We are just two ATPs in a quad with a microphone, a mission, and a whole lot of passion, amplifying adaptive innovations and giving voice to every story worth hearing. This is where stigmas shatter and perspective shifts. So buckle up, because at this roundtable, we're not just talking, we're building a movement. Let's go. Season two starts now. It's gentlemen.
On. Hey, Danny.
How are you?
I feel good, guys.
Speak up, Danny.
I feel good.
You feel good?
I feel good because I just got off a week break. So today was my first day back.
Oh, how did that go?
Good. I did a lot of nothing.
What?
I did a lot of nothing. I just, you know, after just being on it as a teacher all the time, it's just, okay, leave me alone and I'm going to disappear for a week. I didn't disappear, but I just was a sloth for a week.
Good for you.
Just that and eat and then eat again and
eat.
And then have a drink and then have another meal and then repeat.
So you didn't charge your unit all week?
No. I'm good. Yeah, I was that and then football.
You guys watch Longhorns, the Texas Aggies and
the
Cowboys. It was a good weekend for people like us.
The last 2 weeks have been good for us.
Yeah.
It's the setup.
Yeah, I have no comment. You know how I feel about the Cowboys.
The only drawback to the weekend was that the Houston Texans won.
What?
Yes. I like Texas.
Hell yeah, brother. That's my hometown, Texas.
No, that was the drawback, though.
Why?
I don't know. I never even bothered with the Texans. It was my friends that always just insisted. Texans fans, which I didn't bother with, the Texans, just always interjecting about the Cowboys. So I just decided to fire back. Otherwise, I didn't have an issue before.
I got you.
Yeah. Well, they beat the Colts.
Yeah. It was they have a really good defense.
Yeah. How was y'all's Thanksgiving?
It was good.
Yeah.
Did y'all go anywhere?
Yeah, it was the best.
Oh. Any trips or anything?
Nope.
To the kitchen. That's about it.
Medical Cena.
Round trip.
Yep.
Put in my steps.
You know, I was
pushes.
Curious over the weekend.
What?
I was wondering what you did.
Me?
Yeah, I kind of thought of you a couple of times. I was like, I wonder what he did. It's a unique year for you.
Absolutely.
We're not going to talk about details about that.
Well.
But it was a unique year for you.
It was tough.
Yeah.
Yeah, man.
So what did you do?
I stayed home with the family. Family came over to my dad's house, so we celebrated there. But yeah, it was my—
Your brothers?
My brother came, but this was my first holiday in I don't know how long, alone.
Yeah. Yeah. And you?
Post-divorce.
Yeah.
So it was a trip. It was a challenge, but yeah, get through it. It's not always going to be this way. It's going to get better,
I'm sure.
What was the meal?
Turkey.
The meal's important. What'd you all have?
Turkey.
Turkey?
Yeah.
I smoked a brisket.
We had a
turkey as well, but the last 4 years we've been smoking turkeys.
Yeah.
Just mix it up.
It was a lot of people. Cranberry sauce. You guys eat cranberry sauce?
No.
I love it.
So cranberry sauce, I have a funny story. I'm 57, so I was about 50 before I decided 1 year, I was like, I'm going to try that. I almost said the S word. I'm going to try that. And so I tried it and it was like crack to me after that, dude. So like I'll eat it 10 times during the year with chicken, like almost make like a mini Thanksgiving. So the Thanksgiving meal for me is one of my favorite meals. You know, when people ask you what's your favorite meal or what would your death row meal be?
What would be your death row?
It would be, I almost said F word. It would be a turkey dinner with a whole can of cranberry just for myself.
I'm thinking like a botana.
But you're doing the cranberry, like the gelatin, homemade cranberry sauce.
With a fork, I like to connect the meat, the stuffing, and then the cranberry, and then just, and every bite, and every time I scoop, I've got the three. And when you mix the sweet, the savory, and the different textures, yeah, it's amazing.
It's an explosion of flavor in the mouth. Well, I mean, I love cranberry juice, but I don't.
Yeah.
I'm going to be in my last meal.
You know, we're leaving Fran out. Let's go ahead and introduce Fran. We're so sorry.
Oh, I'm enjoying it.
We have our first in-person guest.
Yes.
Fran, just give her the proper introduction.
All right. So buckle up, kiddos. Today on the show, we're joined by Fran Esteves, OTR, a veteran school-based occupational therapist whose career spans decades of service, advocacy, and hands-on work with students who rely on adaptive equipment to learn, move, and assess their education. Fran's journey started long before she ever entered a classroom as an OT. She began as an adaptive PE teacher, following in the footsteps of her father, an athletic director and adaptive PE coach who shaped her work ethic and pushed her to be her best. As Fran says, you know this song and dance, a reminder from her dad that she was built for this work. Throughout her career, Fran has fought for students who are too often overlooked when it comes to medical equipment, wheelchairs, seating systems, and adaptive tools they need to fully participate in school. She believes school districts should take a bigger role in the wheelchair ordering process instead of relying on outside therapists who see the students once. Her focus is simple: The equipment must match the student as a learner, not just as a patient. Today, we dive into her experiences, her frustrations, her solutions, and her vision for what school-based therapy should look like. Welcome, Fran.
Well, thank you, Fran, very much.
Welcome to the show, Fran.
Glad to be here.
I was thinking on the way over here that it's amazing that as long as both of us have been around, I've never met you before.
Isn't that weird?
Yeah. We know the same exact people.
That's hard to believe. I was so surprised.
Never heard your name.
I told Fran about you. I go, you don't know Roland? He's like, no, yeah. I don't think I met him. And I asked you, have you heard Fran?
Yeah, that's right. Uh-uh. That's right.
That's pretty cool.
That is very weird.
Yeah. It's amazing.
Exactly.
But before we get into the interview, I want to talk about the whole Thanksgiving thing. So do you know what the top five leftover meals are for a Thanksgiving turkey?
Top five.
Stuffing.
So, well, yeah, but okay. Number one is the classic turkey sandwich. I don't do that, but I guess.
I had some.
Number two, this is crazy. Turkey soup or turkey soup noodle.
It's like a noodle soup with chicken. It's just turkey. Dude, it's poultry. It's the same thing.
Well, it's a different bird. Number three, it's turkey pot pie. Any of y'all ever had a turkey pot pie?
Yeah. The Swanson kind.
That's same as what I was
thinking. The 99 cent. Now it's like $4, but
now we make it at home.
It used to be like a buck.
You can make a pot pie.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you know, Kentucky Fried Chicken has a pretty good one.
Really?
Yeah. Excellent.
Right?
Excellent.
Right? Yeah, they do.
I'm missing out. Number four, Thanksgiving casserole. And this one's kind of crazy. Mashed potato cakes. Leftover mashed potatoes mixed with egg, flour, seasoning, pan fried until crispy.
That's kind of Northeastern kind of type of vibe right there.
So what are the top five meals for Christmas? What do y'all have as far as your main?
And it's basically Thanksgiving and you add tamales to it.
That's kind of the thing.
I was thinking the same thing.
Yeah.
But
it's not any, and ham. Ham is involved.
Ham, of course. But this household, it's pozole, menudo, and tamale.
We're already on the list to pick up our tamales.
From where, Delia's?
Yeah, we had to pre-order.
If Delia's would have like a little sister named Sally, and she would make Sally's tamales, she could make a killing just charging like 10% less.
I see Danny's sauteed turkey and tequila.
Not bad.
Sounds good, right?
My OT thing doesn't work. There you go. I'll do that.
Okay, well, let's start into getting into some OT conversation, school conversation. Ms. Frantz, tell us a little bit, how did you get into this whole OT school career? You started off as a PE teacher, but then you jumped into more of an adaptive physical education
I sure did.
Tell me about that.
So, you know, I did teach PE regular, and I had grades, you know, pre-K through 8th. It was pretty good. I learned a lot. I got a lot of experience. And then, you know, I knew about adaptive PE, of course, because of my father, my role model. And I really liked what he did. I wanted to do that. And when I was doing regular PE, I did work with a PT who would come and service one of my students. And the PT and I were friends. I was also friends with his wife. So he kind of showed me some stretches I should be trying to promote and do with this certain student. So I said, okay, well, let me try. And he says, well, you know what you're doing? You're doing really well. He says, why don't you look into therapy? So I said, you know, I should. That was kind of the jump. That was kind of, you know, what got it rolling in my mind that, hey, this is attainable. I was actually working on a master's, you know, in the same field of kines. And my father was just really not satisfied with that because he had that degree. And he just kept telling me, for what? You're a teacher. For what? The extra $1,000 you're going to earn a year? For what? He says, no, ma'am. You need to go farther. I already know you're going to be bored. And he was right. I was starting to get bored. Just a long story short, and I'll probably say this a few times in a nutshell, I probably would have been a better PT than I am OT. I just, you know, just the whole premise of it, you know, from the get-go of the, you know, education of the kines, you know, it's very much set up for PT. Yeah. However, of course, it lends very well to OT as well. Got to just think about things in, you know, different light. Not too different. Very, very parallel. Very similar. Have a lot of friends who are PTs. We think we're so similar. We think alike. But, you know, it was from there. Got into the adaptive PE, but, you know, I was very fortunate to land that job. I was very, very fortunate. I worked with a wonderful team of three other adaptive PE teachers. Plus, we had amazing assistants. And I loved everybody. The whole team was just dynamic, amazing. We got along so well. We did beautiful jobs. Adaptive PE for me was a lot of fun. It was a lot of fun. I learned a lot about adapting equipment for kids, you know, mostly utilizing PE objects. Anything, you know, you can think of for PE that you're going to adapt, you know, we did. You know, I did that and it kept burning in my head. And I had kind of stopped that master's degree in kines, but it was just still burning in me about what my PT buddy and I had spoken about, maybe me being a therapist as well. And, you know, I was on my back burner and I thought, started, you know, thinking about it really seriously. And I could actually see myself doing it. And I started to do the research on it. And upon doing adaptive PE one afternoon, one of my classmates who happened to be a CODA certified OT assistant begged my pardon to use my bag because she needed to see if I had some things she could utilize with a student she was servicing for OT. So I said, sure, have at it. Look in the bag. See if, you know, anything you could use to help the student, go right ahead. Be my guest. So she did. And meanwhile, I was preparing for Special Olympics with another student. You know, we were doing basketball stuff, basketball drills. So she drops off the bag to me later because we were at the campus for a couple hours. And, you know, she said, I've got a lot of things to tell you. Some, you know, catch up with you, whatnot. So then I asked her, so what do you do now? And then she started to explain to me that she had her associate's degree and she was doing this, that, and the other. And she wasn't just servicing schools. She was also, she was a contractor. So she was also working at nursing home, home health. You know, my eyes were just getting bigger and bigger. Like, what?
Yeah.
You're servicing all these age levels, all these populations, and you're sitting on an associate's degree. And here I killed myself for probably 5 years, going full-blown certified, you know, and I knew this girl was making pretty good. And I thought, wait a minute. Whoa, I can do this.
Yep. I know a handful of gals like that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, same here.
They're awesome. But, you know, the good thing about her, not just because she knew me personally, she took her time to explain to me. It was very funny because she pointed towards the university and she says, you know what? They're starting up a master's program. Did you know that? They're going to have a graduate degree. First time ever because the degree is moved up.
Right.
Okay. So she told me, you need to get over there. You need to go check it out.
Right.
I sure did. I did. I went and inquired, you know, found out what I needed to find out. And this was, I want to say, about February. I can tell you is by the grace of God, I landed a spot in that program. By June of that same year, I knew I had been selected.
You started in August?
Yes, I did. Mm-hmm. I was delighted. I was overjoyed, you know, and I kept thinking to myself, God has opened up an opportunity. You better do your best. You better listen. You better not fail because technically you cannot in grad school. I mean, you get thrown out.
Right, right.
You know, just better jump all the hoops and do everything correct. I sure did. Yeah.
So how quickly after you graduate, you went to the school district?
I went straight into private clinic pediatric setting. Uh-huh. I did. And knowing what I know today, you know, being a therapist many years already, I did the right thing. Because this is, to me, this is a lot like ballet and dance. You need to have the structure first of ballet before you can really, really roll and go and do all kinds of other dance forms. Once you have that basic down, you understand so much more because of the terminology, et cetera, you know, with dance. But as far as therapy, clinical setting, clinical base is really the premise. Learning as an OT that I can speak for, you learn so much. You learn and you see so much. And you deal more with the doctors, more with the specialists. You deal a lot tighter knit with the other disciplines. And for me, because I am going to be an individual who needs the tutorial after the tutorial, and I'm not afraid to admit it, my ADHD self, you know, I will admit it any day. It helps me to kind of go back to the basics, kind of go back and know why. The whole theoretical reasoning, why we do what we do and see it in action. School districts, that's a complete other beast. They're run in a certain way that unless you are coming out of a school, you are not going to comprehend your role and do it perfectly well. That's why I know I made the right decision by doing the clinical work first and understanding that and getting that down packed. Then, you know, let me go take on the beast of the school district.
What was your population? Did you see a lot of CP? What was more?
It was primarily autism.
Autism?
It was primarily autism. I did have some highly involved individuals. I did have some cases. I did have a few wheelchair patients that did come in to see us. I took a lot of advantage when the PT was there because we did the helping of the transition, get them out, get them to the floor, get them to the, you know, the bed. It's like a bed, but that's where we do the exercises. Right. Yes.
Roland,
scared me.
that it gets you off guard. Yeah. But what's your experience with kiddos with autism and getting them in wheeled mobility and that type of equipment?
It used to be okay, dude. But over the last few years, it's gotten really, really bad. It's,
what do you mean?
Because you've got to show physical. You know what? You one of the arguments, and this is a...
Are you talking about getting
stuff... I wish I had prepared for this question.
Are you talking about getting stuff covered by insurance or just the equipment itself?
Yeah, justification. Getting it approved. It's almost impossible.
But going back more into the skill of developing it, like what are you looking at when you're trying to determine a base or a piece of equipment for someone who's...
I just look at the referral. It says autism.
Yeah, but there's different levels of it, though.
It didn't matter. I shouldn't have said that, but it's the truth. Uh-huh. Because it's not going to matter. I need to... That diagnosis in and of itself doesn't really help me...
Exactly.
...get anything else. A car seat's even tough. You know, the safety, you know, with the buckle, and they're like, well, just get him a buckle, you know? And that's a great retort, by the way. Get him a buckle, just get him a buckle. They don't need the car seat. You know, their regular car seat throw a buckle. It's not so much that, it's the size. So autism, you get bigger, heavier. There are no car seats for you, you know? When you're past the weight capacity of that kid's car seat... And that's where that comes into play. But that argument was always stumped me, man, about the, well, why can't you just throw a little cap on there and on their existing one? It makes sense. They're right if the car seat's underweight, if they're underweight.
Yeah.
Capacity. Sorry.
So over the years, it's gotten.
So like strollers is a big thing for autism. Everybody wants a stroller.
Even though they can, even though they're
ever worked with me, worked for me, with me as part of a team, CSR techs, especially CSRs, they knew that I wanted to do them. And I think they knew it was a waste of time, but I did them anyway. Until I got to other companies, you know, my last two companies, we didn't do that. So it just got completely eliminated the last place I worked at. So I was like, that's not going to happen. And so, but it makes sense, but it's a diagnosis. It's a physical thing. It's walking. It's got to do with, but the, you know, some of the things I argued in the past were about them running. Have you ever gone into an autistic kid's family's house? There's different levels of that, different behaviors. So I've seen when there's not a picture on the wall, there isn't anything that isn't, you can't pick anything up in the house. You can't open up anything. You can't pick anything up. And so they live a hard life. So the stroller, Medicaid considers it like a restraint in a way, like you're restraining them in there. Well, no, I'm keeping them safe, you know?
Right.
I'm keeping them safe. So I could go on and on. I wish I'd prepared for that particular question. I should have. That's a great, great, best question ever. Because it's huge. There just needs to be somebody smarter than me arguing. But it's there. The argument, I think, is there. I think just the fact that they're not stable to be, you're going to have to hold them. You're going to have to carry them. And she can talk, you can talk a little bit about that, Fran.
Like, oh, yeah.
With those behaviors, because they're runners. They have like 7 locks. They're all, the locks are up here. And they're terrifying moments that they've lived. Multiple families that I've known where they've taken off, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
They've run out of clinics. I worked Brownsville. I had one run to Boca Chica.
So my arguments for the equipment was always the behavior angle. He's got a, you know, impaired unsteady gait or whatever. I never argued that. If it wasn't there, then we'd argue safety.
Safety?
And the buckle guard and the, you know, that's what we would argue. But to answer your question, sorry, I get long-winded.
That was actually pretty good.
Conduit for what?
Nonsense.
What obstacles did you run into trying to get justification for equipment? Let's say you wanted a stroller. What would be your angle to try to justify it?
Exactly what he said. If it's not a physical factor and it's something that is neurological but not affecting mobility, standing, balance, it is very scary and it's very hard to justify. What he mentioned about the restraint, that's a big thing, especially in schools. Stroller, whatever kind of, we'll say chair. We'll just use the word chair. You know, that is really big. I think a lot of times whenever we get the diagnosis, that's where either the problem begins, or sometimes I've had to make phone calls and say, is this it? Is this all we've got? You know, because I'm going to have a fight with insurance. I'm going to have a hard time, you know, to get things highly approved. Or do you have another method that, you know, you're thinking? Really, it is. It's all in the wording and it can be very difficult.
I have a question because I was interested. You said on the diagnosis, it just says autism. Is there not, like, they don't put levels of it or they don't add other things to it? Like, I'm just, because I don't know that
side. I don't remember.
Some do.
Some do?
Some do. But if you don't have a physical problem.
There might be something not comorbidities, but there might be other diagnoses. But in general, but it might be MR or it could be just different things that don't apply to getting them a chair like you've got.
Right.
You know what I mean? Right. It just doesn't apply. Especially everyone wants a stroller. And I get it. And if I was a parent with a special needs kid similar to that, I would want a stroller because it's fast, it's easy, and you can get a buckle guard with it and keep them in there without them having the ability to get out. Right. Do you know what a buckle guard is?
I think so.
It's a little box you wrap around where you buckle people.
Uh-huh.
It locks and it's like a medicine cap. So a kid would have to physically know.
Oh, okay. I got you.
You know, kids can't get into our medicine at certain ages. So that's what that is.
Wow. I never thought about that.
Everything's diagnosis driven for the most part.
Yeah, I was remembering back. I used to have a neighbor that high level autism, and he would always leave his house, and you know, we'd randomly hear like the door wiggling, or he's trying to get in, or just he used to always turn off the neighbor's like AC unit. So he liked that lever for some reason, but he just got too big, and then he can't stay there at the house anymore. His mom just couldn't handle him anymore.
I would ask for like CPS reports. I would ask for police reports because they would have them, and so I would ask for that. So I always justified from the safety angle. Mm-hmm. And if it's there, if it's autistic and he's got something else going on,
he could
have spina bifida.
Right. Like I was going to say like a primary, a secondary, diagnosis. Right.
But generally your kid's autistic, it's not happening generally. There's people that still try, I think, but I'm pretty still fresh on the ground in the CRT where I know that most people aren't accepting that or trying to go for that.
Hydrocephaly, you know, and spina bifida.
It's got to be neuromuscular diagnosis. And
mm-hmm.
It's just tougher now.
It is, but everything in therapy is tougher.
Yeah.
Everything.
So unfortunate, but
It is.
So Ms. Fran, transitioning from the private practice you're at, going into the school district.
Right. That lovely, lovely Coda who helped me open my eyes is the one who contracted me.
Yeah. You can give a shout out if you want.
Sheila Trevino.
Sheila.
And Sheila is an OTR. She is a graduate of TWU. She went for the gold and she finished it up.
Good for her.
Yes.
Texas Women's, right?
Yes. So, you know, she worked as a CODA and she just went ahead and got her OTR. She always has had the capacity.
I think I know who she is.
I just don't think she always had the time. But she's amazing. She is a pioneer. She is. And she is definitely somebody to know. And I'm very fortunate to not just be her classmate, worked as her OTR, but I am her friend. That's and cool. She is my friend, and I'm blessed. I'm very blessed by her knowledge and just
very cool.
Her ways of helping people. But she offered me up some work and said, well, we're going to start small. I've only got 3 districts for you to work. And only? That was sarcastic.
That had to have been sarcasm.
Totally joking.
Yeah. It was
Donna
and Weslaco.
Uh-huh. Yeah, so we had those. And later on, we added in Mission. Okay. Yeah, she knew people. She... You know, she was a mover and a shaker. She had a, you know, just contracts, and it was just
those. I can picture her.
Very big contracts, you know, to have with school districts because you know they're big. They're big, big enough districts.
Oh,
yeah. She even helped me get my own side contracts with some Montessori's and charter.
Oh, that's pretty.
So
cool.
She helped me.
Yeah, showed you the way.
She taught me the business end of it as well. You know, she taught me the OT part pretty well too. And you know, she's just an amazing person, but. I contracted in with her, and I feel very much like she did was my Rudolph in many ways, and she led me. However, you know, of course, I had been a teacher. I had been exposed to the school system because you've got to know that end inside and out because, you know, Dad knows it works very differently.
The red tape.
Ton of it.
Yeah, a lot just to get anything done.
People think insurance are hard. Go try a school district.
Well, let me ask you this.
Yeah.
For people who fully don't understand the school district, the teachers, administrators, parents, what is the role of an occupational therapist in the school district?
Okay. The role of an OT, if you are a contractor, you're an independent. You're under a vendor. However, you take the guidance from the special ed department, you are going to be considered a related service. And you fall under those guidelines. If you are an in-house employee, you are an employee of the district. So, you know, not that you have to go pull lunch duties and things like that, but, you know, there's other things. Exactly. There's other things you may do. You should participate in Special Olympics. You should participate in nearly everything and anything that special ed students, whether they are an OT student, whether they're a therapy student, just because the mere fact that they are a student participating, if, you know, it lends to the time, should be part of their activity just to show your support. But, you know, when you are the in-house employee, you are underneath the school district. I'm underneath the special ed department. I am considered related service.
Yeah.
So, you know, right.
Can you can you define a little bit when you split? I'm assuming you guys had the PT assistant and CODAs. working alongside you, the school districts, right?
I did. I had CODIS when I was a contractor.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
How is that division of labor divided? How's the division done?
As a contractor?
Yeah.
Okay. So basically, since I was the OTR, I was the supervisor, and I had, I'm going to say, a team of CODIS, and we distributed the districts out. Sheila worked as a CODA. Sheila technically was working right. for herself.
Right.
I was her supervisor. However, she was my boss.
Right.
She wrote my check.
Right.
Because she owned the bid. That's how that worked in that scenario. Yeah. And it worked beautifully. Right. We had beautiful team. Everybody knew their role as a CODA. Everybody. And we would help each other. Like when it would be coming down to the grind of Christmas time.
Yeah.
If I would be done myself with evaluations, I would jump in and help with treatments so that the CODIS, we could all get everything done on, you know, in a right. timely manner. Because
right.
when it comes down to the grind, it's technical.
How many schools per district were you guys working on? Because that's really what I'm super curious about.
Okay.
How many?
And they did whenever
so
we...
So how did you divide that up? 4 weeks?
It's a 6 weeks. Like a six weeks
yeah, yeah,
period
yeah.
is
yeah.
what you mean?
Yeah.
Right. And I mean, are you talking like how I would do my evals or how the CODIS would do their treatments?
Both.
Okay. The way I would do my evals, everything in special ed is set by dates. Special ed runs on dates.
Right.
Okay. So I would have to do a lot of triage. Who's first? Okay. Eleanor in Donna. Oh, I better hurry up and get hers. So we have Marco in Wesico. Okay.
Right, right.
He's next.
Right.
You know, and there was times I would have to do that. Like if it was coming down to they're due the same day, but only one, I would have to make my trips out to the different districts and just see those certain three students, we would say. Everything's a triage with evaluation.
Right.
You've got to get it done. As far as service, the direct service, this is a normal direct service. Normally it's 2 times per 6 weeks. 30 minutes. Now, you get little kids, they cannot tolerate a 30-minute session. Normally, they cannot. They cannot tolerate every other week either. It just depends on the individual. Depends on many, many facets of the individual. A lot about their faculties, a lot
right,
about their
right.
physicality as well. Many, many, many things. You know, we get older students also that they don't need the 3 or 2 times. You know, they're good. Right. They're so good that perhaps they need to just be on a consultation level. That consultation level takes place with the teacher.
Right.
And the teacher feeds us what's going on, where the need is. Is it a need for any adaptation or is it a need, you know, for something to be switched up?
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, anything. And it can be small things. It could be big things. Yeah.
So you weren't at every school every single week. It was kind of spread out.
For my job, it was. As far as the CODIS, they were on a schedule
right.
because they had their caseloads.
So it was mapped out for them.
Very. And you become a master scheduler, let me tell you. You do.
Like Rico?
Mm-hmm.
I was going to ask, how do you, as a teacher myself, right, what would be some things that we would need to, like, what are the main things that we need to focus on in order for us to best do that part where, you know, the information you need? Is it just, because I'm thinking about my room right now, my classroom. Let's just say somebody's in a wheelchair in my classroom. There's no way. I can get around it fine because I'm very capable of it. But like my room, everything's kind of in curves. Because that's how the lab tables are set up.
Mm-hmm.
And getting them up or down, that's a problem. But if I had a kid in a chair, they're sitting right next to the door only because it's easy. There's not a lot of, it's the area where there's most room and there's not a lot of hassle as far as getting around. They can do it. I can map it out for them if I had to because that's usually the route I take. But yeah, I'm just thinking about that. Like how most classrooms are, there's too many kids in the classrooms nowadays.
It
so
is.
How do you manage that part? Because there's not room for wheelchairs.
It is hard.
And then there's not tables for wheelchairs, really.
No.
So what are some of the things that you've seen? Or
okay. And I have had to go into classrooms. I've had this. And, you know, usually we need, 5 feet by 6 feet to do a full-blown rotation. Mm-hmm. Sometimes I've had not so much problem with them understanding to pull up to an open table. I've had the problem with the heights.
Okay.
Okay. I've had to bring janitors in or be in buildings and ground people, whomever
right.
has the tools, and they can make that adjustment to fix the height.
Right.
Height is important because we don't want pressure upon those legs, upon the extremities.
Right.
Right. That I have seen more height being the problem. Then, of course, when you're dealing with things like that, you're looking at the person's back. You know, the person sitting in the chair, you got to make sure that they're not struggling. They're not applying too much pressure on the lower lumbar. You
right.
got to see where is this coming into place.
Uh-huh.
A lot of times I've had to give a, hold on, I can't think of the word right this second, but it'll come to me in about 3 minutes. A slant board. There
okay.
you go. And the appropriate slant board, the appropriate size of it, you know, is it accommodating to them?
Right.
But what I look for, kind of, I understand what you're saying. You're walking into the room. It's very tight. Right. The accommodations for the chair, it's hard. Usually, I need them closest to the door. That's smart. You got a fire. You got a problem.
Yeah, the first one's out.
They need the accessibility.
I have two exits for my class, so that's that would be a problem.
Right.
I would probably assign a student to help that student.
Yep.
They need it.
Mm-hmm. Up here.
That area, both doors would have the space, the 5x6 area. Mm-hmm. But whenever I, like me personally, whenever we have meetings in other classrooms, there's the desks, the individual desks, which that's not going to happen. So there's always, you know, so one of those little tables in the back area or something like that. And then you said height. And I, for me personally, a problem that I find a lot, not only height, is depth. Feet are always hitting whatever barrier is there. It's a pain in the butt.
The height and the depth, the problems. I agree with you.
It's a pain.
And then we go order stuff, say, how much is it going to cost? It's ridiculous. It's very ridiculous. You know, and I get a lot of these very nice janitors and they all look at me and say, I just want to take the whole thing apart and reconstruct it. And the hilarious part is they know how to do it.
Right.
And I tell them, do your best. Just do your best. And they're like, I hope I don't break it, miss. And I'm like, break it and redo it. Break it and rebuild it.
There's one thing I did do. It was for me, but it's also for if I ever, because I've never had a wheelchair user in my class.
Okay.
I had the kids from the welding and wood shop make an extra large table.
Nice.
That is extra tall and extra wide that would fit pretty much any wheelchair. And I have it there. I use it, but it is my backup in case I ever do have a kid with that. They can fit in the, because the tables that we have, they're fixed and they go up and down, right?
Mm-hmm.
But if there's ever a time where I want that student or they prefer to be in their own table, I do have that. I use it for myself, but I thought, you know, one of these days I might need it for somebody.
That's right. And that's smart thinking and you're pre-planning. And it would be beautiful to use that model widespread throughout the district. Be aware.
The other thing I'm trying to have them do is they made some patio tables because in the outside area, we've got that. But if you've ever sat a patio table, the ends, again, it's a depth problem. The table only comes to here because my feet are hitting.
Yes.
I'm trying to get them to extend those things so they can, it'd be easier for people in wheelchairs so they can sit out there as well.
Mm-hmm.
So there's little things like that.
Oh, yes.
It's just...
Accommodation is ridiculous. It's like, okay, got this right. Oh, but this is wrong.
How about student organizations? Because you were talking about Special Olympics earlier.
Yes.
We had it was a bowling competition, I think we had recently. And we have a student organization where the students go out there and they're kind of with one of the students.
Mm-hmm.
And so they go out there and they're kind of like their sponsor or whatever.
Like a peer?
Like a peer.
Yeah. Peer support.
Do y'all do anything with groups as far as the students go as well?
Well, I just participated as well. We had it at Main Event and there was a bunch of districts there.
Right.
And the good thing was that they broke it up into several days.
Okay.
So that it wasn't too congested.
Uh-huh.
And I got out there.
Okay.
And I coached for bowling. I loved it. My fellow OTs did it. It was beautiful.
Yeah. The kids came back all excited.
Oh, my God. Yeah. The paraprofessionals got involved. it was beautiful. And I was so happy to be able to send photos to the teacher back at the classroom with the child holding their medal with a big smile. It was beautiful. It was a good experience. And I want to really hand it to the organization for all of that. The people at Main Event, they did the right thing. They kept the music off. They kept the crazy lights calm. The whole environment. You were there.
No. So I saw the pictures because some of my kids were peers.
Okay.
So they went and they go with the students.
We support.
Yeah, they go with them. Yeah.
It's a thing to
do. I forget what the club is called, but we do have that club, which goes with them and always helps them out with sorts of stuff.
Well, that's good. But I tell you what, it was a very accommodating. It was an accommodating experience. And like I tell you how they kept it, different days. So less people there. More space for individuals in chairs.
Yeah.
You know, you're not congested. That's nice. A way to do things. Yeah, worked out very nice.
There is something else about Main Event that I wanted to mention. And there's more an adult thing. Their bar, they do have a section for people in wheelchairs as well.
Really?
Yes. It's lowered and it's a section towards the end. So there's them, just for those grown-ups out there in wheelchairs that want to drink at a bar. There's that one. There's Top Golf that has their section. Walk-ons down the street, you can go to the bar and they have this crank where it lowers so you can sit there. And then where you all had the expo, in that bar area, they have a section there that you can sit if you want.
That's
to sit
a lot of bar knowledge, brother.
That's pretty cool, man.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, but you know, it's I like having, because we're talking about Main Event, I like having a drink at the bar and really no places you can do that.
Have you been in places where it was just pretty terrible for you?
A lot of places like that. One of the biggest problems, and this is a off topic, but tables that have that the stem going right down the middle with the four little legs sticking out, those are the worst for wheelchairs.
Do tell.
Which one can't?
So it's just a regular square table where it's got that bar going right down the middle.
Yeah.
And at the middle, it spreads out into like a plus sign.
Right.
Yeah. Those are the worst.
Oh, yeah.
The height is fine, but you have to go at a corner or where there's open because even if I'm not hitting one of those pegs, my feet are going to hit that post in the middle and I can never get in there. Some people have found a way that they have these extenders. So these extenders on the actual table. Who has that? Palenque Grill at the mall? I can sit on one of those tables, but there's an extension that comes out towards me, so I'm not hitting my feet at the bottom, right? So there are some places that have figured that out, but regular tables, like this table is fine. I'm off to the side here, and there's nothing really in the middle, right? But if, like, I would be hitting that thing, right? Sure. That's the worst, yeah. Right? So there's little things like that as an OT, or you guys, whenever y'all are, yeah, you have to kind of consider, right?
That's right.
Just little things.
I got a funny OTPT story. So for most of my life, most of my wheelchair life, probably from 1992 to what I'm talking about is like 2005 or six. For the very first time, I was working at Marshall Mobility and they sent me to TIER to go see a patient at TIER. So for the first time ever, my whole career before that, I was used to PTs, wheelchairs. Like PTs predominantly were doing our wheelchairs. So I get to TIER and PTs are doing bathing stuff, which threw me off forever and ever. So like the roles were kind of swapped, if you ask, like from my previous experiences. Mm-hmm. So the OTs were the ones dealing with the wheelchairs mm-hmm. and the PTs with the transfers. Is that how it was?
That's how it was at Craig, I remember.
Yeah, that's the way.
Yeah, I mean, the PT was a little involved, but it was more the OT.
Yeah. So I'd never experienced that till 2006 when I went, Mike sent me there, you know, for eval.
Yeah, coming down here at DHR, the PTs
do it. Threw you off, right?
Yeah, because I was used to it in Houston. The OTs,
right? And a lot of OTs get involved with like the head array and the switch driving for switches and stuff like that. Back then, now it's kind of mixed.
Yeah,
like it's
good. I'm
now
glad
it's crossed
mixed.
Over. You guys are all, but not TIER or Craig apparently.
Yeah, I don't know why that is. I didn't think anything weird, but I just figured.
But it makes sense.
Yeah,
because everything in a wheelchair, you have to function.
Yeah,
and OTRs functional.
Yeah.
What do you think, Fran?
Well, I tell you what. This is the way I do see it. We do everything. I just feel that OT, we get our hands into everything, you know, and there's nothing wrong with it because we do have that angle of pay attention to detail.
Right.
You know, not that PTs don't. They do. They're great. I've learned a lot from some PTs.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's like function is everything. And you've got to really pay attention to all those little aspects and accommodations.
Yeah, and y'all document differently. The OT and the PT writing the same, very same thing for the very same piece of equipment. Mm-hmm. This. I always do this.
Finger movement.
Yes, the OT.
Very narrative.
Yes. On the narrative, they get into more detail about. Mm-hmm. There are some subtle differences that you learn over the years of doing this. But if you look at the evals, they're slightly different. They're more, they're different.
Yeah. I thought I was the only one that noticed that.
No.
Yeah,
it's you can see their strength where it comes out in the eval. You can see both sides.
It's all technical report writing. Yeah. It's just it is done in a
but I've
slightly
also had,
different way.
I had an OT ask me, hey, what do you think of the tone here? It's like, you ought to know. I kind of was like, she's a friend of mine to this day. And she's like, she hits me with, you know, with her elbow. And she goes, we didn't do that too much. Like, what do you think? I said, it's pretty strong. It's a whatever. But I gave her the answer she was looking for, what I thought. That's not the case anymore. God, I'm going to get in trouble if she hears this.
So, Fran, in your experience when you're seeing your kiddos in wheelchairs, what are the top five things that scream at you when you see on a wheelchair and you're like, why is that on there? Or B, why isn't this on that wheelchair? Because from our perspective as the ATPs, we know what we can design and put on the wheelchair. Coming as a OT out of the school system, I'm thinking you're trying to figure out what's more functional as a student.
I know a lot of it, first and foremost, has a lot to do with the involvement of the individual and what's the accommodating factors that are going to best suit them. You know, and being that I am not perfectly versed in ATP, you know, I mean, I try to understand as much as I can. There are times that I will look and I will think, why is that tray so huge? How does it even fit? Is it too heavy? How does a kid use it? Are they overwhelmed? You know, I know, I mean, of course, I know the function of the tray, but there are times that I feel or I think this would be better. You know, something maybe smaller, something more accommodating. You know?
So a lot of them are super wide.
They're very big.
Yeah.
And I think, do they need that much space?
Well, we
is this helpful?
I literally make them like this.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm doing a drawing of
I'm
just
watching.
A drawing.
I mean, that's all I'm doing. And then I'm giving these measurements.
I see that a lot.
I'm giving these measurements, this measurement, this way.
And this is plexiglass or wood, right?
Yeah. So it's got three slots for width so that the hardware it attaches to. So the problem is we have to do three inches of growth. So if it's a kid and he's got a tray, it's going to be wider because of the growth aspect of it.
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah, because if I ordered it small and perfect.
Yeah, and I see these teeny weenies, well, and I'm like, oh. Yeah,
if we grow the chair at all, it won't work ever.
No, I mean, it makes perfect sense.
But I agree because I've made some that I've like, oh my God, I made that too big.
Like for this almost, time and day, it's
yes,
too big.
Almost 80% of the time I do.
There you go. Yeah, so you were like, thinking the same thing.
I'm just curious, at what age do you stop doing growth? Like, because I've seen those trays at the school, but for somebody in high school, would you have to add that growth thing also as
like,
well?
When does it top off?
Probably 16, 17, 18.
I was going to say like a female at 16.
16, 17, 18. Mm-hmm. I've seen them top off at 12. You know, it just depends.
But then again, their diet can change.
Yeah. And I know weight is a big one.
Yes. Yeah. And adults, I mean, you still have to kind of deal with, even with Medicaid Superior, with adults, they're still going to make you make that chair 2 inches wider than it needs to be and 3 inches longer. They're still going to do it. They're not going to not consider the growth, even just for weight gains and weight loss. Yeah, I better not say what I was going to say.
Well, no. I was going to say, some of the biggest wheelchairs I've seen are at the school.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Those are monsters.
Yeah. And I've seen some really with high backs. I mean.
Yeah. If the kid's propelling, you want that chair as narrow as possible, you know?
Yeah. Maybe big was the word, like really busy, I guess is the word I was shooting for.
Too busy.
Really,
too many bells
really
and whistles.
Busy wheelchairs. Some of the busiest wheelchairs I've seen are art school.
Were they tilts?
Yeah, you've got tilts, you've got trays, you've got high backs.
Levers.
You've got all sorts of stuff.
They're very involved in.
Yeah.
What else do you see, Frank?
With the chairs?
Head scratchers.
You know, sometimes I do see bits and pieces and parts that are maybe roughed up. Maybe I see cushion, I see where it's been torn, and sometimes I see taped, you know, and a lot of times I'll hear stories like, oh, the father tried to fix this for the kid or, you know, the dad or the mom or the teacher even.
Like Anthony's dad.
You know, there's times. I mean, that is to be admired because they made an effort to try to fix it. But, you know, like sometimes I do know the rule of the 5 years that sometimes it's not the time, right? Am I correct?
But you can always modify.
Aha.
Yeah, you can always modify.
Within those 5 years.
It has to be documentable. Or documented.
Right. But well, that's good to know though.
Yeah.
You know,
you can change anything. You can even change from a tilt to a regular K5, which is like what Danny's using.
Mm-hmm. It's like an ultra lightweight manual.
So you see, hey, this kid can use his upper extremities. It doesn't matter who the therapist that wrote it up before is. Okay. If you can describe it and it's different than what was written before, because it had to have been justified for tilt before and not, they had to have discussed why they couldn't propel. But if you see that he can clearly propel and you do a trial with one of the guys local here, you do a trial and then you can figure out whether he can propel or not. So you can write it up, shoot video and make any changes. But generally, if you're trying to replace the same with the same, 5 years.
Exactly.
Is that your understanding of the 5 year rule, friend?
What has been my understanding since like 2000, maybe somewhere like that.
Yeah, that's when it started.
You know, when I got a little bit more involved understanding the wheelchairs. That I understood the 5 year rule.
You know that Medicaid eval, dude? This first eval I ever saw in 1992 was that exact eval. It was just the print of it was different.
So, what have you done in your past to get somebody a wheelchair within those 5 years?
What do you mean precisely?
Well, let's say I am in a wheelchair and I can't grow it because it's a rigid frame.
Yeah.
And I put on 10 pounds.
Okay.
Over the summer.
Okay.
So, I'm coming into school, I'm fitting snug, and I keep on getting wider.
How old is it?
How old is the kid or the wheelchair?
The chair.
The chair is around 2 years old.
Boy, you made it two on purpose because it's a tougher number. So give me the whole scenario. So how fast did he outgrow it? How much has he outgrown it? And anybody see this coming?
No. He went away for the summer. He went to go live with dad, had a better diet, better protein, you know, just came back a little heavier.
Yeah.
He was just being a kid growing.
Nobody made any bad choices because a rigid frame is going to be lighter and stronger.
Right.
The fact that I almost blame the ATP, but at that point, 2 years, you can't blame anybody. Is the same ATP doing this assessment or is it a new company? Is it the same ATP? Mm-hmm. He's got a lot of splaining to do.
So how would you approach as far as documentation?
The same as if it was 5 years old, dude. Mm-hmm. It doesn't fit in it. The same if it was 4 years old or 3 years old, in my opinion, just how I feel.
Right.
Yeah. That's how I would deal with it. I would deal with it just normal, playing it straight, what you're looking at, she's looking at, and you write it up. And despite the mistake being made, because a mistake was made, that's why I said the original ATP has a lot of explaining to do, because I find it difficult to believe that anybody can gain. This is a pediatric, older pediatric guy, apparently, you're describing.
Yeah. Okay.
He's not, you know, we're men. We don't get wide there. It's like this kind of thing right here that grows. So we don't get wider from the hips. So the guy, the ATP, has a lot of splaining to do. And I'm doing Ricky Ricardo's voice, splaining to do.
Yes.
Yeah, sorry.
Okay. Question. Yeah.
So basically, just do it exactly the same way as if he had it for 5 years. He doesn't fit in it anymore. His hips are 17, the chair's 15. You know, his tires are hitting, whatever.
I have one more 5-year question.
Go for it.
Does that only apply, like, is it that a Medicaid thing, or is that really most insurances?
I was talking Medicaid, because Medicare is a whole different thing.
It's a universal concept.
So all your other insurances, it's going to be a roughly 5-year thing also?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
They follow one guideline.
But this mistake, if we're talking Medicaid with this mistake, because I called it a mistake. If he outgrew it in 2 years and it's a rigid,
it's a big mistake.
You took the chance with that rigid.
Right.
Because you had other options. So Medicare, you're not getting, nobody's taking that case. And I'm not saying nobody will take it, but I know for a fact I'm not getting paid for a new one. Do you know what I mean, right? You're not getting paid for a new one. For a new K5, you're not getting paid for it. They're not, if it's under five, the 5-year rule we were talking about earlier, that's for Medicaid. But Medicare, it's on record in there. It's hard to remove that, dude. It's hard to remove somebody already having existing equipment. You've been there. I'm sure you have. Where they're showing they have a KAA, what is a basic power group 2?
K823
or whatever, right? Like if they've got one on file, dude, and you're trying to do a group 3, like you're going to have to like go through a lot to get that taken off, even though if you have a pickup ticket. Or sometimes, in the valley, I've experienced where even the client didn't know they had a power chair. That was the mic drop.
There's certain diagnoses that you put somebody in a tilt, they're going to choke, and it just depends. And it, sometimes I just think,
Talking like Duchenne's?
Can be.
Yeah. You got it? It's the whole head.
And I think, I hope somebody unskilled or doesn't know what they're doing throws that person into, a bad position. CP, sometimes, we want to get them out. Make sure you allot time to be able to help them get back in. There's things like that. And, another thing I maybe this is a little bit different. When I did adaptive PE, I took everybody out of a chair because they wanted out. And they needed a break. Their body needed a break. Their back needed a break. Their spirit needed a break. They wanted to be out. And I would tell them, make sure, you understand I'm going to have to do this for a little bit. And then we're going to have to take some time to get you back in there safely. Took time for children to understand that concept.
Yeah.
But, it's just certain things like that. Like I would say kind of it's under safety maybe, because you don't want to push back into a chair. You might never know about the integrity of the bones, integrity of the muscles, and you hurt them just because you're in a rush,
Yep.
All right. Things to that. I think there's a lot of education that needs to really be done. And I'm talking hands-on, one-to-one with everybody who works with that individual. The paraprofessionals are always very open and very receptive to learning concepts and things about the chairs, about the student, how to better serve them, whether it's a chair, whether it's a walker, even a stander. They want to know, how long, what's the protocols here? They ask, people ask really good questions of me. And if I do know it or I have it documented where I can verbalize it, profess it to them, I show them, it's just things like that. And I hate to say this, schools, you're on time. And I hate it. It's hard. It's really, really hard.
Yeah. What do you mean by that?
It's like almost like a training camp.
Like a time contingency. Currently, I have 8 campuses that I am running around. One of my OTRs, she has approximately, I believe, 13 campuses. Of course, caseloads are different. It equals the same at the end of the day. I may have 20 at one. She may have 10 and 10 at 2 different ones, stuff like that. But that's still driving time. That's still a rush. That's going to happen. So, you have to be, like I said, a master scheduler.
Yeah.
And know, make sure you schedule everything correctly. Down to if you're going to take somebody out of a chair, you better allot for time to put them back in safely. Right. things like that.
Yeah, because it is time consuming for sure.
It is.
I was going to ask a question. I was trying to hear you, and then I was thinking of the question at the same time. My brain kind of freaked out. You were talking about a plan. So earlier you said something about these kids are in their chairs all day. Is there such a thing as a plan for a student to get them out of the chair while they're at school?
Yes.
There is. And how do you go about training the people at school to be able to do that?
Okay. A lot of times, if there is a plan in place, that's going to be in their IEP, and it'll go through the ARD committee. And it would be, it could say several things. It could say needing breaks, need to lie down, need to stretch out, like such as that one child that I did have back in my regular PE days. Uh-huh. He needed out. And, it's just things to that level. And it's in their plan, okay, which is the IEP.
And do you all go out there and show them how to get them in and out and all that?
Either the PT or the OTR, we can.
We'll go out there?
Exactly. We go out there. We've trained on helping accommodate to utilize a sliding board to go to the bathroom.
Okay.
And we train them, usually the paraprofessionals. Teachers jump in there too.
Right.
And we train them because then we have to cross train them.
Yeah.
Because they never know if the para is going to be out. Somebody has to know, students still going to come. They're still going to need the bathroom. So you better know how to safely accommodate that transfer. Yes.
I've been to the hall where we have our special ed kids, and I see like tables and like mats and stuff, but I've never seen a kid on it. I just assumed that they would be, or I didn't really know what was going on. I just saw them there, but I didn't know what it was for. So I'm assuming that's why they have somebody.
Could be a calming area. It could be.
Yeah. I always wondered, and
a break.
Who knows what they have it there for, but
true.
Yeah.
True. Multiple uses.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. We go out there every once in a while. Because they have a really cool garden in the back area that they have the kids do themselves.
They cultivated it?
Yeah.
Good.
So we go out there and we'll help them every once in a while. But yeah, that's the only way to get to that garden.
Part of the living classroom.
Right, to get through that. Yeah, to get through that. We have to go through their hallway to get to.
That's nice.
Yeah, so you get to see all the kids out there. But
sure.
Like I said, I've always wondered about that, but I just didn't know how they used that or how you all went about even showing them if that was an option.
Yes, no. Like I tell you, I cross-train people we'll say an individual with CP, how to physically handle them, where to support, how to handle, kind of also how to look for weaknesses or if you feel that they're going to bobble and fall.
Right.
Yeah.
Been to a lot of those ARD meetings, but I've never had one that high end. Most of them are just some sort of learning thing that they just need extra time or whatever, right? But I'd imagine there are some that get really involved.
There's some that take longer time. And, a lot of, depending on the involvement of the individual. And, it's a lot of it is, okay, how, and it's usually at the beginning, it's how are we going to accommodate? How are we going to get through a day?
Well, how much of your time is spent outside I'm assuming you work in the self-contained quite a bit, right?
So a lot.
And so you see other children that are in regular classes. Mm-hmm. Where do you pull them and go to? Do you go to the nurses? I've always kind of been curious about that. Always.
Okay. With the self-contained students, on a normal basis, I am in the self-contained room.
Right.
There are many reasons why. Safety is one. Accessibility to the bathroom is another. Sometimes it is a behavior thing. Spaces in schools are difficult. It is difficult. But there's a lot of testing that's always going on, right? In these public schools.
Right now, so we're testing.
We've all got to be quiet in these halls, right?
Yeah. I've been there many, many times.
And sometimes some of these little children, they are not quiet.
Yeah.
It depends. It depends on many reasons, right?
Sometimes they would shush the wheelchair guy.
Yes. They will tell us our place.
Mm-hmm. For sure.
Oh, they tell me. Oh, they'll tell me. I'm their OT. They'll tell me. Sometimes I'm lucky if I can take them to a sensory room. And I'm even luckier if there's a desk and a chair. And then whenever the students will say they're a resource student, because normally to receive OT services, you have to be in special ed. So you're going to be like, say, a resource student. A lot of times I'll use the library. Some of these schools, they will have like a conference room that they'll allow me. I usually ask the front desk. Oh. They normally say you can use this room or for testing.
Very cool.
Try to do it as much in privacy because, for the integrity of the person, the student.
Very cool.
It's kind of tough for newer schools because all schools now are kind of in one big building, if you think about it. At our school, it's an older school, so we have all the departments or all the different rooms. You have to go outside to go to a different building. So you'd have all the privacy in the world at our school, but the bad side is it's a pain in the butt to navigate that kind of stuff. So yeah, there's a give and take, but yeah.
Now, friend, you had mentioned you had some questions for us about wheelchairs and adaptive equipment.
Okay.
So I'm going ahead.
I want to know something.
I'm going to hand the show over to you now.
Okay, here we go.
I don't answer questions now.
I want to know, what is the normal length of an evaluation that you do.
As far as
to
like a whole wheelchair clinic evaluation?
For one person.
With the therapist or without the therapist? So you mean as far as an actual wheelchair evaluation, mm-hmm. if you call me and you want to see me for a wheelchair yes. evaluation for Johnny, little yes. Johnny, it's going to be an hour.
Approximately an hour.
Yeah, no more than an hour.
Okay.
But there could be other things involved. And I'll let Rico answer part of that as well.
I'm dying to know what the longest took.
You know, basically, you're going to walk in there with your mm-hmm. form or on our computer, on mm-hmm. Rico's computer. So the evaluation, we're going to discuss all the equipment that day during the evaluation. We're going to take measurements. We're going to do all that thing. The traditional, typical, old school way was you sat there and you filled out every question. You hand wrote it or you did it on a computer years ago. And we would actually finish that eval. And it was about an hour after we got done picking colors, taking measurements and all those things. But as I got older and further into my career especially towards the end of my career, it was basically almost never done, right? The evals nowadays, like it's just not even done because we do so much up in the front end as far as equipment, because we'll have the chairs with us. Yeah. We'll have the chairs in the facility like a DHR and things like that. So story short, 1 hour, but you could have a trial that you have to make another appointment for in the following week.
It all depends. Inside the rehab facility, for me, I have got my therapist trained up a little bit to kind of what to expect as far as my clinics. I get this information ahead of time. I read the final report. I see what I'm dealing with. And then I get in there. By the time I'm walking in, I have an idea what I want to do. But when I lay eyes on the patient, my mind starts, okay, this is what I want to do. So what I want to do. And luckily the therapists have gotten a lot better recommending equipment. But yeah, they'll usually have them in a chair that they want, whether it be an ultra lightweight manual wheelchair or a Liberty with a little bit of tilt in the back. And then I get them on the mat. And that's why I started doing my measurements, my range of motion. And that's something that I've got a student right now who's training under me, and I'm teaching her, you have to get your hands on the body, feel where the back's, you know, where's neutral, how far away am I from neutral, where's my pelvis. That's the way I was taught. So maybe around 30 to 45 minutes.
Okay.
But most of the therapists do take they use their own time to fill out the evaluation form. It's not something mm-hmm. they're doing right then and there.
Uh-huh.
They're bigger hospital. I was in Tier and all the other major hospitals in Houston.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Just depends.
What is the longest time that it took you?
Oh, jeez.
What would you say?
Never more than an hour and a half.
Really? No.
And it was because of the therapist. Because I'm remembering exactly, but there's a particular one. I'm not going to say her name. She's not going to say her name. But it's a telehealth therapist. And she could go 2 hours sometimes. And yeah. But she was sweet, amazing. But that's the only time it's ever taken that long. Usually all that we're given is an hour, typically, you know, as far as for y'all's time. You know what I mean?
Oh, yes.
We're given an hour. So we squeeze it in. We'll figure it out. An hour.
The longest I've done one?
Mm-hmm.
Around 2 days. Yeah.
I get you.
Because I was working for Invacare. I was the Invacare rehab rep. So we had a veteran that was we had a new TDX SP2, which is the new model for the Invacare's mothership power chair. And we were launching the new Lynx electronic platform, which gave you live programming from your phone. So we thought that this veteran had, so we were going to put him into a hand dry. He couldn't do it. He had just gotten worse. So we had to take that back. Got to go back in the van, had to program. So we had to actually build how he was going to drive this wheelchair. And then we thought we had him going really good with a little mini joystick, but he fatigued. So he couldn't maintain it so they'd come back. It worked, but you know, 3 hours, he can't do it anymore. So we had to go back out there. So getting into some very involved trials can take a while.
Mm-hmm.
And it take until you get it down. And luckily with the Lynx program, you can actually save the profile that you want, that you've got him driving, because you have to do all the parameters, how he's driving, the sensitivity, everything needs to be dialed into that file. Needs to be written. We can save it in Lynx, and then we can have that file emailed to the manufacturer, and they'll install it into the system. So once it comes out of the box, it's driving exactly the way we trialed them. So yes, it can take a while.
I see. Yeah, I figure just like us with our type of evals, it just depends. Sometimes we have to come back. Student fatigue can't deal with us. Behaviors are starting. They're not giving us our bet. You know, they're not really showcasing what they know or what they can do. And there we have to come back. So I clearly get it.
Yeah, are they having a good day or are they having a bad day?
Right. You know, and I think I was wanting to ask you all, what are pitfalls, downfalls, I guess maybe that you've had with OTs that you wish we knew more of to help you for the eval? Like things preliminarily set that we should know or would help you?
Honest to God, I'm going to answer that and say that's I've just never really had an issue with that.
Because OTs are just perfect. Amazing.
No, they're just perfect. Literally perfect.
Good.
The OTs that you're doing a wheelchair evaluation with, mm-hmm. like wheelchairs.
Yeah.
It's when you get your therapists that are contract therapists, they won't do the evaluation. So if you have a passion for it, it's going to be good. One thing that I do is I educate and I teach.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Now, I just quiz my therapist, like, why do you want this cushion? Yeah. Why not this one? Mm-hmm. Why this size? Why this tall? How much compression? You know, I'm giving them. You talk to any therapist I work with, they're going to tell you that's exactly what I do. Because it's my job to get you educated on the product. That's my job. I'm not a clinician. I'm not going to tell you about the body and anything like that. But I'll tell you what a cushion can do for you. Mm-hmm. And if I get you up to that speed, we have an idea of how it works. It gives you more confidence. And then you start asking me questions. And then you start building up your database on the equipment. And that goes with you. No matter if you're practicing 5 years from now, you're doing something else, and they ask you, do you have any experience in wheelchair management or clinics? You say yes. Guess what? It's going to put you a little bit higher than the other applicant.
Right.
And that's true.
Yes. You know, and I know certain settings are very good for certain individuals. I'm talking therapists. Like, some love hospitals, some love schools, some love elderly, geriatrics. You know, we all have our forte of what we like. And I think it would be kind of the same thing with apparatus, like with wheelchairs. You're going to have your aces. You're going to have your very, very good ones. And then you're going to have those that kind of maybe shy away because they're unsure. But I like what you said when you said, I educate them. That's perfect, you know, because you know your craft. And you obviously very well been doing it. And, you know, it's not something that I think, even though I'm a therapist, I would be the ace of it within a week. And there's no way. I mean, it sounds like a ton of things to know. I mean, it sounds like I probably need, I don't know, months, year to learn.
Yeah, you're great, dude. You're still in the league.
Yeah.
You're still in the league.
Yeah, I like it.
The good thing about it is when they call and ask you.
Yeah.
You know, you're driving. Hey, what's that cushion that starts with the letter what mm-hmm. and it has a number 2? Well, you mean the M2? That one. No.
Right.
So they start calling you, or they start texting you, or they'll start sending you videos about wheelchairs that do certain things. How come we can't get this funded? I'm like, gosh.
Right. You know, and I mean, I guess maybe to speak for some OTs, you know, some of us may have not had a lot of opportunities to become very versed. Like, we know bits and pieces, and we've done a little help here and a little help there, or we've been thrown into something, and it was hard because we don't do it every single day. Not all of us do. Some do. And I mean, my hat goes off to my fellow OTs that are just beyond amazing, and they get their hands in there and they do things that are very hard. But, you know, I find it fascinating. I love it because it helps people. I have little children that I love dearly are in chairs. And you know, sometimes I try to make so many accommodations, make them fit in that crazy table with their peers, you know, just to, I want them to be part of it all. And I think at the end of the day, that's really what we want. We want them to enjoy and take part.
I like that.
Yes.
That's good.
That's great.
That's how I feel.
Have you ever, Rico or Roland, like thought of having like a little mini wheelchair for beginners that you would have, that you would hand out, which is kind of outlines the basics of a little bit of everything that's like a starter guide for like OTs, anything like that? Is there anything like that?
I'm not sure I understand the question.
So like, when I was a patient, mm-hmm. right, there was the Bible that we have from Superman. What was it called? What's his name? The old Superman?
Christopher Reeve.
The Christopher Reeve Foundation. It was everything I needed to know on the basics of spinal cord injury just to get me going, right? It's like, wow, all these things, right? Would there be something, or would it be helpful for you if there was some sort of thing outlined where it's like, okay, these kind of chairs, lightweight, which is really good for this kind of patient. And then we've got these cushions that can do this, right? And this is what a tilt might do and might help with, right? Something that kind of breaks things down simply, or at, like in a beginner level for OTs, because they do all know everything about the body and stuff, but like, how does that translate to a wheelchair, and what could we start looking at? That way, when you come in mm-hmm. and you all do an evaluation together, she or him are not completely lost, and it's a good starting point for the both of you.
You know, like if it was a kid we were seeing tomorrow, mm-hmm. you're going to call me and tell me it's CP, high tone. Already in my mind, I'm either doing a power or a manual tilt. But one of my questions to you, does he propel? You're going to be like, yes or no. It leads me into direction for our conversation tomorrow. So then once we get there, we'll kind of figure it out pretty quick as far as what direction we're going with that. Does he actually need tilt? Now, if he doesn't need tilt, he can kind of propel. Then you could do that or power. So what was the original question?
Well, no, like, because when you go there, you're going to be kind of explaining these things.
Yes.
Right?
So I explained it almost every single time.
Right. But would it save time? Would it be a little bit easier if they already kind of had previous knowledge that on some sort of, right? Maybe it's just a binder that has some pictures overly complicated, just simple.
I think most therapists, I would say 99.9999, they have a general idea that they're going to get a chair that the client can push. So they have it in their head, can this client push? They're going to generally know when tilt is more or less relevant.
Right.
And but you do have to kind of split differences and talk about differences of each thing.
Right.
And I've often said, hey, we could do this or this. Nobody's going to get mad at you for doing either one.
Okay.
So, you know, but what's the goal? What are we doing here?
Yeah.
So no, I've never like gave them anything like that to educate them anything other than from a manufacturer standpoint.
Okay. Yeah, because in my mind,
and then everything is.
Right. It's
different. Every client is so different. Every customer is so different.
Yeah, and I totally understand it. I'm just thinking in my mind, you have your, like the different companies, and they've got their brochures and stuff.
No, but Rico and I think, Rico does a good job of explaining his way as he's working towards helping to determine the equipment. So we end up explaining to the therapist or to the family or to everybody nearly every single time what the differences are and why this is probably the best bet. And it's usually this relationship here, the therapist and the ATP.
I mean, I'd assume the more you see each other, the less you're going to need of that anyway.
For sure. So. But generally, I think they're aware of when they say, I need a wheelchair for this kid, they already kind of know what direction they're going to go in.
Okay.
And then reading off the diagnosis to me, I kind of know. But not until we start, you know, doing range of motion and checking out what the goals are, whether they're self-propelling or not self-propelling. One of the things that I would say is always, I'm not in the business anymore. So I have no, dog in the hunt? Is that
dog in
the
fight.
But everyone should be in power. Every kid should be in power. And my whole thing, it's crazy that we ask a 35 or 45 pound kid to push a 45 pound wheelchair.
Oh, yeah.
It's insane. It would be like me being 198 pounds today. Pushing a 200-pound wheelchair.
You can do it.
I'm sorry. No, it's not a 200-pound wheelchair. It's a like 600-pound wheelchair would be the equal, somewhere around there. So a heavy chair, we're asking these kids. So I've always been a proponent of power. I believe every kid that cannot propel a manual wheelchair effectively should be in power, always, because they get to move and understand their environment. Otherwise, they're stuck. They're not moving. So the perspective of being tilted all day, not being able to, you know what? I'm going to go check out Sally Lou over there. I don't care who they are. I don't care if they're 2 years old. They should be in power. No dog in the hunt anymore. They should be in power. Everybody should be in power. I'll get off the soapbox.
That's hot take
power.
Right there.
Yes, hot take.
I agree.
Power.
I don't know anything about them, but I could see that.
So
it's hard to push a wheelchair. It's hard for me, and I'm able.
So your chair is probably what, 60, 55 pounds? Well, right. Without those wheels, normal wheels.
Normal wheels, the previous 40, 17 years, 40, yeah. It takes a toll.
So that's a quarter of your weight, right?
Right, yeah.
Or less than more than a quarter of your weight.
What am I, 160, 165, somewhere around there?
Yeah, about close to a fourth.
It's a lot of weight all day, every day.
Yeah.
Fran, what else you got for us?
You know, I just feel, you know, like the more versed we are as you know, clinicians, you know, the better flat out we're going to be with fittings. And not only that, eyeballing it, seeing it, preventing it, reporting it, getting the help, looking at the label on the chair, being able to call and say, hey, I'm seeing this.
Yeah.
Could you come out? You know?
Yeah.
And I think a lot of it's really just being so versed. But, you know, like the scenario we're giving about the heaviness of the chair and we're asking kids to push. And, you know, yeah, I get what you're saying. And it's true.
Yeah. They should have both. I'm sorry. And I never said that earlier. They should have both. And a lot of times they do have both anyway. But I feel like a lot of people are forced into manuals and they've got these unequal, rigid movements. And it's really, really hard. And, you know, I've always told the story of my original National Seating and Mobility branch was about maybe a 1 minute drive from my house. Originally, many years ago, but I never walked to work. I drove. So that's what my argument always with PTs, certain PTs, they didn't want to push power. Certain doctors, I'm not going to mention that person, but no power. But yes, everyone should be in power. I'm sorry. Sorry, not sorry.
Really feel power.
I'm with you.
Especially kids, 2 years old.
Yeah, there's no way. I see kids in high school that are pushing manual wheelchairs and I can see them struggling.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
Now, if you want a manual wheelchair and you want all that, man, I'm going to be your biggest advocate for that.
Right.
You know, that's cool.
It's Fran.
Yes.
I'm going to ask you one final question, all right?
Okay.
So you ready?
I hope.
You've given decades of your life to serving students who often don't have a voice. Advocacy means a lot for you. So what will be your legacy once you are done?
Well, you know, this is something that I don't care if people don't like what I have to say to them. And this is a little bit different, maybe. I have worked in areas and with therapists who are under me, and I have told them, be careful what you say. They have ears. They pick up on your affect. Watch how you behave or what comes out of your mouth, what you do in front of others. And I'm talking the patients, the students, the person affected. You know, I want people to be a lot more sensitive. But with reason.
Yeah.
Because just because somebody has autism or any of it, Down syndrome, it doesn't matter what they have. Watch how you behave in front of them. Because to me, that says everything. I just think, you know, if you're not going to be correct, and I'm not saying you have to be overly inclusive, just act normal. Treat them normal. And in a little bit of what I mean, también, is like, when they talk to them, I'm like, they're not deaf. They can hear you. Right. They're not 5. They're 15. Treat them their age.
Just be authentic with them.
Very right. authentic with
yeah,
them.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, I have a big problem with that.
Yeah, me too.
I do.
I've seen a lot of people do it.
I don't like it.
The unauthenticity.
You know?
Yeah.
Right. And, you know, not only that, everybody, we want to be like our peer. Doesn't matter what setting we're in, school, wherever, in the social, it doesn't matter. Treat them like the peers.
Yeah.
Give them the crossword puzzle that's just as hard as so-and-so's. Yeah. So what? Let them try it. I feel that if I leave anything with younger therapists, the students I am overseeing right now, I've told them, consider what you do in front of others. And I'm not talking just in front of your therapy buddies. I'm talking the people you're working with that you have gone into this profession to help. You better help them. Don't be hindering. Don't be doing the wrong things. Also, if you're going to want to go into the therapy, especially OT, you better be in there for the right reasons. Yeah. You know, because your job doesn't just stop at 5 o'clock or 7 o'clock from the clinic. No, there's more things that are going to come and they're going to, you know, come up. You've got to do for that patient to help.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, to help them. You know, I just hope that they're all in the field for the right reasons, because it's work. It's a ton of work. It really is. And it's work of the heart.
You didn't seem too nervous. Did you enjoy yourself today?
I sure did. Yeah, I was happy to be here.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's how I felt about the whole thing. I was
sorry about
delighted.
We canceled, when was it, Wednesday?
It was last week.
Yeah. Sorry about that.
Don't be. It's all right.
We made it work.
I still took off to the island. Didn't matter.
You had a good day.
Yeah.
Got anything for Fran?
No, that was fun. That was informative. I wish we did more of this in schools. I don't see it enough. Right.
I do too.
Well, I'd love to have you back on so we can talk about safety on school buses and school bus drivers.
Actually, I'm going to go take care of something tomorrow. Drop a strap for a bus. I've got that assignment.
Yeah, we should do an episode on transportation, wheelchairs, car seats.
Yeah. I do not go on the bus whenever we have a trip at school, because they tend to put the wheelchair users in the back of the bus, and motion sickness is no joke. No joke. But they're always in the back of the bus.
Yeah.
I don't know why. Mm-hmm. Sure, there's a safety thing going on there, but
is that where the lift is?
Yeah.
Yeah, but why not?
It is.
In the front. Like,
I think it's to their benefit, probably.
I don't know, but
it's something with the bus.
Something with the bus. Maybe it is. It's just we don't think about that, but motion sickness is a real thing, and I get it. That's why I don't, every time we have to go on a trip for something for work, I just follow the bus. I did it when I used to do robotics and got real sick one time and never again. I felt safe on it. Like, it was very sturdy and the straps were awesome, but I think it depends on the bus driver.
It does.
Yeah.
You know.
The bus driver was just a little bit too much fishtailing. And yeah. Maybe it wouldn't have been so bad on like a shorter bus, but I was on a long bus and, oh, dude.
You felt it.
Yeah. I don't know.
People always get sick with me driving. People have complained to me so often in my life, dude. Like, I get nauseous when I'm with you, man.
Yeah. I just imagine these kids, they can't really, maybe they're nonverbal. Like, how do they express that?
That's right. Exactly. Thank you. Exactly what I mean. When I was talking about attention to detail, that's a factor right there.
Yeah, put yourself in their shoes and think of all these little things that normally you just don't.
What they endure.
Oh.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Fran, thank you so much for joining us today. Thank you for coming on the show. And for the Quad Father and for Roland and myself, we're wishing everybody a happy
post-Thanksgiving.
Post-Thanksgiving. and a happy holiday.
You're
happy holidays.
It was my pleasure.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Mm-hmm.
Bye.
Bye-bye.